presidential campaign for Senator Kennedy, the Democratic presidential campaign, as on his swing through the South. The Coliseum is about full. There are a few vacant seats, about 100, I suppose, up in the very front of the Coliseum where we are located here at the press box, and at the very rear of the Coliseum. There's an extra estimated crowd tonight of around 15,000 people to be packed into this wonderful Coliseum here. I'll be back in just a moment with more on Senator Kennedy's campaign from Raleigh. The governor of North Carolina is now taking his place on the stand. The crowd is now standing. They are giving him a standing ovation, and you can hear the crowd roar in the background. Governor Hodges will introduce Senator Kennedy, who has not yet arrived, I do not believe.
I'm privileged to present to you a man I am confident will be the next president of the United States. My faith in this prediction is based partly on realization of the crisis that our country faces. In critical periods in the past, competent leaders have arisen to see us safely through. I think we are facing one of those periods. It seems to me that it has never been before so vitally important as it is now that we have a man greatly devoted to truth and principle and dedicated to serve his country as this man has for 14 years in the Congress and the Senate. Our Democratic candidate for president has faced in complete frankness every question that has been raised in this campaign as to his qualifications for the presidency and has been discussing the issues with deep understanding of what these issues mean. In order to ensure his victory in November in North Carolina and the nation, we need to do nothing more than to make clear to the voters of this country the quality of his leadership for the country and his concern for its welfare and his vision about its danger and its destiny. We will need greatness in the White House in the years just ahead of us if the United States and the free world are to survive and grow stronger. Believing in the ability of our own people in North Carolina to sense greatness in leadership and to discriminate intelligently among those who offer themselves for high place, I feel confident that North Carolina will help elect this great American in November. I proudly present a gallant soldier, a profound student of lofty statesmanship, and a statesman himself to this audience of my fellow North Carolinians who are well qualified to sense the strength and devotion behind the simply spoken words of Senator John F. Kennedy. I present to you the next President of the United States.
The Honorable Luther Hodges has just introduced Senator Kennedy, and he is now coming down the aisle here in the Coliseum tonight. There are about somewhere between 15 and 20,000 people here, which are packed into the Coliseum. This is on a statewide hookup, television and radio, the local television in Raleigh. Here he comes now, ladies and gentlemen. He's coming up now, walking up on the platform. As you can hear the crowd roar, gubernatorial nominee for North Carolina, Terry Sanford, is beside him. The Governor Hodges has just shook his hand and he has stepped up to the platform. You can hear the enthusiasm of this crowd as newsmen from NBC News, all local and state hookups, radio, TV are around with the clamors. Everyone is shaking hands. It's quite an enthusiastic crowd here tonight. There are banners all over the place. It says that the Southern Baptists are for Kennedy. It says the South is for Kennedy. Everyone has got their Kennedy for President banners flying high. The balloons, many balloons are are flying around.
Mr. Chairman, Governor Hodges,
here is Senator Kennedy.
I am proud tonight to be here in a great Democratic state as the standard bearer for the oldest political party in the United States, the Democratic Party. The great strength, in my opinion, of the Democratic Party has been that it's not only survived every crisis in the history of our country, but it also represents every section of the United States, every group within our country, and therefore representing the people, it speaks for the people. I am proud tonight to be introduced by my friend, your distinguished Governor Luther Hodges, who has led this state and who has been associated with us intimately in this campaign, and by your next governor, Terry Sanford. I serve in the United States Senate with two distinguished Democrats from North Carolina. Senator Ervin, with whom I served on the Rackets Committee for 3 years, and Senator Jordan, who speaks powerfully for the interests of this state and for the nation. And the members of your congressional delegation, such as Congressman Cooley, the chairman of the Agricultural Committee of the House, and other members who speak for their districts and speak for their country. North Carolina has put its confidence in the Democratic Party. And I come here tonight as the standard bearer for that great party and ask your support. Ask your help in this campaign. The people of North Carolina must make a decision this year, as they have in other great years of crisis in the past, which road they will take. I think the decision is quite clear, because I think the alternatives are clear. Mr. Nixon and I did not suddenly spring out of nowhere. We have not been frozen in ice or collected in amber since the national conventions. We are part of two great political parties which stretch back in history like rivers. And you can judge the river and its future course by studying its past flow, where it rose, where it ran, how fast it moved. When we compare the record of the Republican and Democratic parties in this century, I don't think that there is any question. At a time when it is most important that the United States begin to move again, that it will turn for a progressive future to the Democratic Party as it has in the past. Contrast the political slogans which our two parties have used in this century. Stand pat with McKinley. Return to normalcy with Harding. Keep cool with Coolidge. End Social Security with Landon. It's time for a change with Dewey. And you never had it so good today. I point with pride to the slogans of the Democratic Party in this century. Woodrow Wilson's New Freedom, Franklin Roosevelt's New Deal, Harry Truman's Fair Deal. And now we present in this century and this decade of the 60s, we present a new frontier. I hope that anyone in this state who feels that things are as good as they can be, textile workers and textile manufacturers, tobacco growers, farmers, those who live in this state, those who may be satisfied with things as they are, Those who are satisfied that the prestige and power of the United States is increasing faster than that of the communists, then I agree they should vote for the Republican Party. But those who want to move ahead, those who believe that the United States has a great role to fulfill, those who believe that the future belongs to us, that it requires our dedicated effort in this state and in this country, I hope you will come with us. I hope you will stay with the Democratic Party. I think Franklin Roosevelt put it to us in 1936 when he accepted the second presidential nomination. And in that speech before 100,000 people at Franklin Field, Philadelphia, he said, "Governments can err. Presidents do make mistakes. But the immortal Dante tells us that divine justice weighs the sins of the cold-blooded and the sins of the warm-hearted in a different scale. Better the occasional faults of a government living in the spirit of charity than the consistent omissions of a government frozen in the ice of its own indifference." I think for the past 8 years, I don't think that the American people won in the 60s a government frozen in the ice of its own indifference. I think they want this country to move again. I feel that the 1960s will be a difficult and challenging time for us all. Senator Johnson and I run recognizing that the responsibilities which may be placed upon us will be more pressing and burdensome than have been placed upon any president in this century. I think the Democratic Party must be used for a greater national purpose in these trying days. And I think there are four things that we must do if we're going to meet our destiny in the 1960s. First, the United States must rebuild its strength here at home if it's going to maintain its position in the world. Last year, the United States had an economic growth one-third that of the Soviet Union, and it had the lowest rate of economic growth of any major industrialized society in the world. Here's the United States, a powerful and vigorous country, a country which used to be the model for all countries who wanted to trod the same road that we're treading. And now we've seen in the 50s where countries which we helped at the end of World War II now move ahead at a far faster rate of growth than we do. I think that it's most important that we recognize that as long as there are nearly 5 million people out of work, as long as our steel mills are producing at 44% of capacity, as long as we produce food that we can't use usefully, and that we do not distribute to those who can use it, I think we must recognize that there's unfinished business for us here in the United States. Secondly, we cannot be satisfied with the fact that the Soviet Union is turning out today twice as many scientists and engineers as we are, that it's accepting from Africa and Asia, and Moscow and Peking are both doing it, thousands of more native students who come to Moscow and Peking and go back and carry the message. Here in North Carolina, which has more children probably for its population than any place in the United States, you must recognize above all other states the importance of maintaining a strong and viable educational system. Third, I think it's vitally important. If the next president of the United States is going to be faced with the necessity in 1961 of negotiating with the Soviet Union over Berlin, or defending the commitments we've made in Southeast Asia against the Chinese communists, I think it's important that he has, as commander-in-chief, a military force second to none. I do not think that there is any sense in having the second best defense. It's as useless as the second best poker hand. We want to be first. Not first if, not first but, not first when, but first. And that is our object, and that is our policy. We need an invulnerable atomic force, a retaliatory force, and also conventional forces, which can maintain the peace of the world without resorting to nuclear struggle on both sides. And lastly, we must be prepared to reassert our initiative in foreign policy. The United States has had less than 100 people working on the complicated and scientific subject of modern disarmament. 100 people scattered throughout the entire federal government, which has meant that we've had no position, that our negotiators have gone in unprepared, and that the United States has lost a psychological advantage. We must regain the initiative as a peace-loving country, which is second to none, which is powerful, which talks quietly and carries a big stick. I see no sense. I don't think words are a substitute for action. I don't think the United States is going to protect the peace of the world and our own security by kitchen debates or by arguments in conference. We're going to maintain the peace by being strong here in the United States, by attracting the imagination of people all over the world who stand today on the razor edge of decision, attempting to determine whether the world is moving with the communists or moving with the West and the United States. Mr. Khrushchev once said, "The old and the rotten will always fight with the newly emerged, but it is a law of history that the new will always win." I think we're the new. I think his system is as old as Egypt and just as rotten. And therefore, if we maintain our position here, if we maintain our strength, if we maintain our economic and political and social vitality here in the United States, then it will spread through the world. And the people who watch today will determine that our high noon is in the future and not in the past. That's what we want to do. Our strength here in the United States, as in the days of Woodrow Wilson's New Freedom and Franklin Roosevelt, who was strong here at home and therefore strong abroad, and Harry Truman, whose fair deal had its accompaniment in his policy around the world, point four, the Truman Doctrine, the Marshall Plan, NATO. Unless you are moving at home, you're not moving abroad. I ask your help in this election, not promising that if we're successful, life will be easy, but saying that we can move again in this country, we can fulfill our former promises, we can assure today on the 173rd anniversary of the ratification of the United States Constitution, we can assure another 173 years if we in our generation recognize that we too have a rendezvous with destiny. If we're prepared to bear the burdens and responsibilities which go with freedom. After the defense of Thermopylae 2,000 years ago, when a few Spartans defended the pass against the masses of Persians, you will recall that above their grave, there was carved in stone, "Passerby, tell Sparta we fell, faithful to her service." We today want to live faithful to the service of the United States, the greatest system of government ever devised, and it requires the best from all of us. And I am confident that if we meet our responsibilities in this year of decision of 1960, this country will be free and it will be known as the home of the brave. Thank you.
You have just heard the address by Senator Kennedy here before this packed William Neal Reynolds Coliseum tonight. There is an estimated 20,000 persons here. It is packed to the brim. There's not a seat empty. The crowd is now standing up, giving him a standing ovation, the Honorable Luther Hodges, the governor of North Carolina, and Democratic nominee, gubernatorial candidate, Kerry Sanford, are all three, and Senator Kennedy are in the center of the stage now, responding to the crowd. In just a moment, Senator Kennedy will answer questions asked from the floor. I submitted a question to Senator Kennedy. I do not know if I would get a chance to ask him tonight, but I was told that he would contact me directly for an answer sometime after the meeting. The Luther Hodges, I see, is up to the platform again. I think he has wanted to ask a few questions. As I said before, the WRAL TV here in Raleigh. WRAL TV in Raleigh is carrying this program tonight on a statewide television basis. There are radio engineers and reporters here, plus all people from the press. There are about 150 press members tonight sitting with us here in the press box. Governor Hodges just introduced Terry Sanford, and he has stepped up to the platform and is about ready to speak. Let's see what he has to say.
This evening, as the audience here in the Coliseum knows, question blanks were given out to anyone here who wanted to ask a question of Senator Kennedy. In the limited time we have available left for television, you can understand that Senator Kennedy cannot answer all of these questions. As a result, we are going to start asking those questions which were asked most frequently by the audience. And in a moment, we will get those questions directly from the audience. But first, Jack, I'd like to ask a question. I have traveled all over North Carolina since the Los Angeles Convention, and I am convinced of all of the things on the people's minds today in North Carolina, that foremost, that the dominant issue, the dominant question, is the sinking prestige of America in the world. And I would like to ask you, as a national view, what is your opinion of the dominant issue of your campaign?
Well, I would say, as I suggested in the speech, that I think the basic problem facing the United States is to maintain the peace, maintain our vital interests and our national security, serve as the leader of the cause of freedom around the globe, and attempt to develop in this country sufficient forward motion so that we catch again the imagination of the world as a power and a system of government that represents the kind of government which all people want to endorse, the kind of government under which all people want to live. In other words, if we do well here, we enhance the prestige and power and influence of the cause of freedom around the world. If we fail, the cause of freedom fails. If we succeed, the cause of freedom succeeds. Our responsibility is to throw light and luster around that great cause, around the globe.
The question I asked the senator was, according to this morning's report in the newspaper, that it was printed in there, that he said before the National Democratic Convention that he would hope to win the nomination without a single vote from the South. Let's see what kind of answer we get from that question if it is asked tonight. Right now, a young lady in the back of the Coliseum here just asked him a question. I'm sorry I didn't get it. He is answering it right now. In just a moment, we'll have another question from the floor and answered by Senator Kennedy. Let's listen to part of his answer to this question.
I think they'll continue their struggle against us, but it will take the form of economic competition, subversion, and perhaps brush fire wars. For that reason, I think we should maintain our conventional forces. I think we should strengthen the kind of forces that you have at STRAC here in North Carolina, increase our airlift, and be prepared to fight the kind of limited war. If we're prepared to fight, we may not have to. As Winston Churchill said 10 years ago, we arm to parley. If we're strong, then I think we can maintain the peace. I don't think it really, I would hope that it would not be a factor in the campaign. It seems to me that in 1960, the issues which I tried to discuss tonight, the future of this state, the future of the country, the security of the United States, the peace of the world, I would think that they would be of far greater interest to the people of North Carolina than where I'm going to go to church tomorrow morning. I served on the Labor Committee for 14 years in the House and the Senate. I'm chairman of the Subcommittee on Labor as well as a member of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. I feel that labor unions are honestly led, and I think the great majority are, to serve a useful function in protecting the interests of their members and building their wage level. Unless we have a strong wage level in the United States, who's going to buy all the goods we produce? We can't sell them abroad.
Fine.
My own feeling is that the Jimmy Hoffas and the others and the Bridges, who we investigated at some length during the Racket Committee hearing, are a minority. My own feeling is that I will not be satisfied as long as Jimmy Hoffa remains at the head of the Teamsters Union. And I think... what I like about the South is that, first, it's a sense of history and its identification with the history of the United States. Secondly, I think it's had a strong, in its history, a strong internationalist viewpoint. It has stood for the defense of our country, its strength and prestige around the world. It has been willing to bear arms in war, and it's had a strong sense of public service in time of peace. Thirdly, or fourthly, I guess, it's a growing section. I think the Franklin Roosevelt administration probably meant more to the development of the South than it did to any other section of the United States. I think the 60s... I hope that in the 60s, the South will continue to move ahead. And let me say what I like, perhaps maybe should be first, is the fact that the South has maintained, in good times and bad, the Democratic Party.
That is the wrapping up now of the Democratic rally here tonight. Before everyone gets out, I'd like to ask a few questions. Sitting beside me here in the press box is Mrs. Henry Bell. Her husband is the editor of the Goldsboro News Argus. And as you probably know, Mr. Henry Belt is also one of the trustees on the Board of Trustees for East Carolina College. Ms. Belt, I'd like to ask you what you think of the meeting here tonight.
Oh, it's been a thrilling experience to hear all the wonderful enthusiasm for Kennedy.
Thank you, ma'am. And I'd like to ask you also, what do you think of his prospects of carrying the South and possibly carrying the election?
Well, I think right now he could carry anything after the speech I've just heard him make.
All right. Thank you so much. I'm glad you feel so enthusiastic and so faithful to Senator Kennedy and the Democratic Party in the South. This has been a special affairs broadcast of Campus Radio. Jerry Winberry here at William Neal Reynolds Coliseum, reporting to you tonight. We take you back now to our campus radio control room.